It turns out there are close to 3 to 4 million children who need speech-language services. Yet there are only 62,000 plus speech-language pathologists. But you're not going to be able to scale. You're not going to be able to work in determining who needs help and what kind of help. These are areas that AI can be a tremendous assistance. So this particular project led by the University of Buffalo is focused on, with a team of folks, is focused on building AI for assisting speech-language pathologists to be able to expand their services so that we can meet the demand.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
Welcome back to the Regulating AI podcast. Our podcast is dedicated to exploring the responsible development and deployment of artificial intelligence. Our podcast aims to bring many diverse voices to the forefront of the AI conversation by featuring insights from various perspectives, from industry leaders and government officials to advocacy groups. I'm your host, Sanjay Puri, and today we have the distinct honor of being joined by Dr. Sethuraman Panchanathan, the director of the National Science Foundation, a leading figure in the advancement of science and technology in the United States. Dr. Panch, thank you so much for joining us today.
Sanjay, it's truly a pleasure to join you again. I look forward to our conversation.
Wonderful. Dr. Panch, our audience is global. We have members of Congress, Senate, their staff, think tanks, industry, and advocacy groups. So for them, Dr. Panch, as the director of the NSF, you oversee a vast portfolio of research and development initiatives. How do you see AI research fitting into the broader scientific landscape? And what are some of the key challenges and opportunities you see in this field?
Thank you, Sanjay. A very important moment, a very important question. When you look at the National Science Foundation, one of the things that I take a lot of pride is the fact that we invest in these kinds of ideas, the technologies of the future, which then leads to the industries of the future, very early. So this AI that we talk about today has been a sustained investment of NSF over the last 5 to 6 decades. I often say we invested even during the AI winters when people did not know whether this is going anywhere, NSF continued to invest. And what you're seeing today, therefore, is the fantastic ideas, whether it is machine learning, computer vision, AI, responsible development of AI, you name all kinds of fundamental core development of AI, they've all been invested in by NSF. Now, talking about AI as it is today, the way I look at AI as we move into the future is much more like what I look at electricity, right? Electricity is the backbone of everything that we do, right, in our daily lives now. We don't necessarily pay attention to it. We take full advantage of it. As we are looking at AI, it is a technology that is going to make possible amazing things that we would almost take it as part of our daily lives. It becomes integrated into everything and anything that we do. It enhances, it enriches, and it makes possible things that are not possible, or they're not possible yesterday or in a decade ago, but what is possible today and what will be even more possible into the future. That's the way I look at AI. So I can then talk about how NSF is looking at this. Today, if you look at NSF's investments in AI, it exceeds $820+ million, right? It exceeds $820 million. And it spans a range of kind of things that we invest in. Of course, we invest in fundamental research, as I always do. That's the core of what NSF is, fundamental research on all aspects of AI. We are also investing in large centers and institutes. We work very closely with industry in areas of common interest. And so we work with industry in some of those areas. We, of course, unleash unbelievable amount of talent at all levels. That's one of the mainstay of NSF also, is STEM talent all across the United States. We also make possible entrepreneurial ventures as well as new industries through our technology innovation partnerships directorate programs like the ICOR program or the SBAR-STTR program, an entrepreneurial fellowship program. More recently, we launched across the nation, and I'm sure we'll talk later, the Regional Innovation Engines program, where AI is part of many of those projects that we've launched recently. So you will find, therefore, when we talk about AI research, whether it is infrastructure, whether it is ideas, whether it is talent, whether it is entrepreneurial activities, whether it is industry-focused activities, whether it is societally important activities, NSF is involved in all of the above and more.
Wow. So just to unpack what you said, you were there during the AI winters, which a lot of people have forgotten. And obviously, it is fundamental to everything you're doing. You're investing over $820 million across many areas, whether it's in fundamental research, entrepreneurship, partnership with education, universities, and in talent. So that's a pretty broad area that you're doing. And how has the approach over time evolved? And how do you visualize your approach changing to AI? Because you played such a crucial role. How do you see it evolving? Because AI is evolving so fast, Dr. Panch.
So when you look at investments of NSF in the past, it's in core research. And through that, the training of talent and some entrepreneurial activities and some industry early investments through SBAR, STTR programs, as I was talking to you. More recently, what's happened, Sanjay, is we have recognized the importance of AI being everywhere and meaningful to many application domains. And that essentially calls for this being much more cross-disciplinary. And so we are investing in cross-disciplinary activities. And we are also investing in configurations. Let me give you a concrete example. We launched 25 AI institutes all across the nation just in the last 3 years. And each of these AI institutes are focused on a particular topic. It might be core AI research being further enhanced through a group of people working together across academia, industry, and other partners. Or it is AI institutes that is focused on specific application domains, right? So we partner with other agencies, we partner with industry, and inside the agency, we partner across the various directorates. It's not just the Computing Information Sciences and Engineering Directorate as important and as strong as it has been in advancing AI concepts. It's also bringing in other directorates like engineering, mathematical, physical sciences, geosciences, biosciences, of course, the STEM Education Directorate, and the New Technology Innovation Partnerships Directorate. And the most important, I would say, of all, is the Social, Behavioral, Economic Sciences Directorate. The reason is, as we are thinking about the future of AI evolution, and I'm sure we're going to touch upon this, we need to make sure that we have ethical, responsible, secure deployment of AI, for which we need to bring the interdisciplinary inspiration, not only from science and technology perspective, okay, but also from sciences like social science, other sciences like social sciences and humanities, the arts. And it is a multidisciplinary inspiration to really solve these problems. Let's not forget, we are talking about AI, which is going to work with humans, enrich, augment, expand, which means that we need to have a good partnership with the human, which means that all of the disciplinary approaches in behavioral sciences, in humanities, and so on, are extremely vital as we are thinking about the future. Back to the 25 AI institutes. It's to the tune of $500 million that NSF has invested in with the partners. What is exciting to me, Sanjay, again, as an example, talking about partnerships, 5 of the 25 AI institutes are in partnership with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the NIFA of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. They have invested $100 million out of the $500 million. Each of these institutes are $20 million scale over a 5-year time frame in investment, okay? And so they have invested in 5 of them with their own dollars. And we are advancing this agriculture in various parts of the nation as a theme that's going to build the smart agriculture, the future of how we conduct high efficiency, high productivity, right? And as I said earlier, with AI being an augmentation, enrichment, enhancement kind of a thinking. And so you can see that this is about true partnerships with other agencies, with industry, with other disciplines, and all sectors, academia, industry, nonprofits, philanthropy, right? International. All of this is coming together if you want to truly deliver on the promise and the potential of what AI can do, right? So I'm very proud of these 25 AI institutes. I encourage your listeners to check out all of these information are available in our website. They can look at the focus of these 25 AI institutes. They can look at the teams of the people involved in this, and they will see that this is truly going to transform our future and make possible opportunities everywhere and innovation all across our nation.
So, Dr. Punch, you said a lot of things. If I can just follow up, some very important things you said. 25 key institutes across many different fields. You also said AI is interdisciplinary. So, and you're bringing many different directorates into collaboration. And you also said something which I think is very important for our listeners. You said, we are dealing with humans. As you said, it is like electricity, and we are dealing with humans. You said behavioral sciences, social sciences, how we interact. Our world, at least in the past, has been that we push everybody towards STEM, which is kind of what NSF does too. Do you think that maybe a relook at the humanities and maybe even the liberal arts will become important as we look at AI from, as you said, interfacing with humans, Dr. Punch? That's one question from what you said. Is that going to be relevant for people?
Sanjay, let me clarify this. NSF does not push people into STEM. NSF ensures that people are able to look at their own inner inspiration and motivation and bring out that where people are excited by STEM and want to pursue STEM. We want to make that happen everywhere across all communities across the nation. So I just want to make sure that is very clear.
No, I apologize. What I meant was that there is always talk about people going into STEM, et cetera, not by NSF, but there's just always been talk that we need more people in STEM. Sorry, go ahead.
No, absolutely. I mean, I didn't think it any other way. You hear people increasingly talking about STEAM from STEM, right? Arts becoming a significant part, right in the middle, STEAM, right? So I think what we are talking about right now is if AI is going to become part of everything, okay? What happens is every discipline gets enriched by AI, and every discipline in turn enriches AI. It's a two-way street. New problems get opened up when you start working with arts and humanities, in arts and humanities, as well as in AI. And so it's a highly symbiotic relationship. Okay, so what we want to do here then is to make sure it's almost like AI literacy, if you want. It's like how English literacy, we want English literacy, right? Language literacy for every student, right? So likewise, this will become increasingly more like literacy. We have talked about digital literacy. This is AI literacy. So that people are all going to see how AI can further become an exciting thing for them to pursue their disciplinary choice, which is their passion, inner passion, whether it's arts, humanities, and so on. So in order to do that, Sanjay, increasingly, at least the institution that I came from before I came to NSF, we made a conscious effort. I founded the New School of Computing and Informatics, right? Transformed it from the computer science and engineering. This I'm talking about 25 years ago now, almost. And at that time itself, we said that informatics literacy, digital literacy, data science literacy, and now AI literacy are all very important for everyone. Therefore, what you need to do is increasingly the schools of computing have to interact, interface. In fact, we hired a number of joint appointments. In fact, some of the early joint appointments that I hired was between anthropology and computer science, psychology and computer science. Because of this belief that I pointed to you, which is not new, it's always been my fundamental core belief that you can unleash amazing possibilities only when disciplines work together to mutually inspire each other. And that's ever more true in the case of AI, because there's a tight connection with the human. And that's why I talked about the human enhancement, human enrichment, right? And people only think of the displacement. It's a lot more about enhancement, enrichment, empowerment, and unleashing, I always say that what we will do now is in the symbiotic relationship between the human and AI or human and the machine, what really happens is the human now starts to express their creativity even more because they are less burdened by certain things and they become co-creative and even more creative, right, with AI and the machine. And that's a bright future that all of us can truly embrace and make possible. Yes, there are other views of what it might be, and we need to make sure that we address those through policy and appropriate guardrails and safeguards and so on. Absolutely, we should do that. And again, how do you do that? Is by ensuring that we engage in fundamental research to understand and find the appropriate solutions.
So enhance is what you're saying in every aspect. One thing also you mentioned, Dr. Panch, which I found very interesting, is that you're working with the Department of Agriculture. I mean, generally, when people think of AI, they think, hey, it's going to be the tech industry, this, that. But if our farming sector also is using that, think about the potential that has been unleashed and also the societal benefit. When you're talking about going into rural areas, maybe increasing the yield, improving things of that nature. So really, NSF is really thinking beyond this and collaborating with many agencies, right, Dr. Panch?
Correct. Exactly. It has to be an interagency partnership, right? As much as NSF has the bulk of the scientific exploration, the discovery-based investments that we make for the nation, but so is science and underpinning of many of the mission agencies like NASA or and energy and so on. So we need to make sure that we work together with everybody because this is the time for us to come together, work with hyper-partnership mode, and not only limited to the interagency partnership, but working with local governments, working with K-12 systems, working with community colleges, working with, of course, universities, industry, entrepreneurial ecosystems, venture capital ecosystems, philanthropy. I mean, I can go on and on. It is not just one. So you talked about rural, right? I mean, if we want innovation everywhere to prosper, what better place for agriculture than the amazing rural as well as urban environments in states like Nebraska, in states like Kansas, in states like Iowa, right? And Illinois and Indiana, just as one example. Of course, agriculture is everywhere. I'm just taking one example, right? And imagine building the entrepreneurial ecosystems, the industries of the future around this concept of enhancing and making possible higher yields, as you said, in agriculture and working with farmers. I mean, this would be the ideal of how to demonstrate that AI is not just for a chosen few. AI is not just the geek world reveling in AI. It's for everyone, everywhere.
Yeah, and also the talent can come from that part of rural areas, etc. So they don't feel that there is going to be, because people talk about an AI divide, just like we have digital divide. What you're offering is people can be talented in AI and trained in AI, even in rural areas, in other parts of the country. It doesn't have to be the two cores. And that, I think, is very important, what you're saying, Dr. Panch. So, Dr. Panch, one of the core themes of our podcast has been democratization of AI. How can NSF contribute to ensuring that many diverse voices and perspectives are represented in the development and regulation of AI?
An excellent question. Democratization of AI means, we talked about the previous point that you made, that everywhere people have a chance to have their AI literacy and AI interest being explored in the context that they think that it can enrich their lives, right? So we need to make that possible. And how do you do that? Is by how we have invested all across the nation. Our AI investment, Sanjay, spans all 50 states and territories of our nation. And I'm proud to say that, right? I'm proud to say that because that's what it takes. And when we talk about democratizing AI, it's also about ensuring, to the previous point I made, that we need to bring the right disciplines here to be honest about our approach, to be honest about where it is working, where it is not working, and honest about how inspirations from other disciplines can therefore come in and work with us to find creative solutions to make it work for everyone, okay? That's the second point. Third point, one of the programs that we have invested heavily and continue to invest more in the talent building is a program called Expand AI. This is about investing in minority-serving institutions. And we have a program called ATE, Advanced Technical Education. It is about investing in community colleges, right? So what we're trying to do is to make sure that AI expertise is not, again, limited to a few institutions, as good as they are, as important as they are, but it is possible in all institutions of all types. And that even our K-12 investments in our science teachers, and that we are providing them opportunities to be able to get themselves trained and become experts as well as appreciation of AI, so that they become the people that excite the students in K-12, who become then the, not only the pipeline, but the various pathways of students entering into the work, entering into the higher education spectrum and into the workforce. And also working with industry so that the upskilling, reskilling pathways can also be made possible so that the industry is successful, and then making possible, as I said, entrepreneurial activities at scale. So all of this will ensure that AI is truly democratized, and taking the real problems and solving them head on, and not being shy about engaging in areas that require solutions. Because who is going to provide the solutions? It's going to be the people with the great ideas and experiences that are going to come in and provide the solutions. So we need to make that possible. That's what NSF is always good at, is always investing in good ideas, always investing across the nation, and that ideas are not the, just for not for a chosen few, but for everyone.
Dr. Punch, a couple of points that you made that if I can follow up. You said you're working now with minority institutions, I presume like HBCUs and others, which is very important to make sure we bring everybody into the mix and we don't have that AI divide. And you said you're also working with community colleges, because 40% of our education happens in community colleges. Everybody cannot afford a four-year college. And one of the things that we've done in this podcast is constantly bring in different diverse voices. So did want to find out what is being done by NSF, whether it is with these HBCUs, these Hispanic colleges, and with community colleges. And then I wanted to touch on the reskilling point. So can you just expand a little bit in terms of what NSF is doing in terms of community colleges and these historically minority institutions?
This is a huge commitment of NSF, has always been, and now we are making it much more intense. I call it intentionality, and intensity is important if we want to really deliver for the nation. So on this front, since coming in, I've been very particular about inclusion as a central pillar of the vision of NSF as we advance into the future. And inclusion means that institutions like the historically Black colleges and universities, Hispanic-serving institutions, tribal colleges and universities, the research to institutions, because we typically focus most of the work of NSF, that the investments, rightly so, because through the merit review process, that's what happens, is most of the investments end up going to Research 1 institutions, some to Research 2 institutions. And we want to make sure research institutions are not deprived because of the fact that, as you said, democratization, ideas are, and talent are democratized. They're everywhere. So how do we empower them? So we have a program called Granted that we launched, Growing Research Access Through Nationally Transformative Equity and Diversity, which is the acronym. And basically what it is, that those institutions that don't have the infrastructure that is required for them to put their ideas in a form that transcends the gold standard merit review, that we are able to provide them that. So I'm very proud that we launched it very quickly, the Granted program already, right? And then making sure that through our advanced technical education program, that we are funding community colleges to be able to build new curricula, inspire new generations of students. Also through the work that we're doing with AI institutes, digital innovation agents, the large conceptualizations also, we want to make sure that they are all partnering. Sanjay, the other day I was in the regional innovation engines, we'll come to that later, launch, one of the centers launched with our First Lady, Dr. Biden, in North Carolina. And there, I was amazed to see, it was in the Forsyth Technical College, the event itself, but bringing together of H2 partners, with six or seven of those being, you know, technical colleges and community colleges in addition to the universities, and industry partners and others, right? That's what increasingly NSF is doing. It's not just a speak or just a few things splintered here and there, but a concerted, as I said, intentionality with intensity, effort to recognize that talent and ideas are democratized, and therefore we need to make sure that we do everything to inspire them. Specific to AI, I talked about the Expand AI program. We are building two pilots, Expand AI capacity building pilots called CAP. This track focuses on capacity building for minority serving institutions that don't have existing AI programs. Another track is called the Expand AI Partnership, called PARTNER as the acronym. This track is an opportunity for minority serving institutions to scale up already established AI research and education programs and to initiate and leverage new collaborations with the AI Institute today. So you can see that these are very focused, purpose-driven, holding ourselves accountable for this expansion of opportunities and connection of ideas and talent everywhere to the NSF investments so they can flourish and they can then in turn solve the problems, grand challenge problems, and contribute to economy, national security, and society. And most importantly, for their own wellness and life, fulfilled life.
Yeah. So, Dr. Punch, that's very good to know, very impressive that you are looking at the equity of AI with all these institutions. Dr. Punch, you mentioned one thing about reskilling. There have been all kinds of reports from McKinsey, IMF, that there could be 60%, 30% job upheaval, transformation, etc. Is NSF thinking about that? And what are your thoughts in terms of this? Everybody admits transformation is coming, and this time it's going to be white-collar jobs. Does NSF have a role in this, and what is NSF doing about it?
Absolutely, NSF has a role in the following sense, that we work in partnership with industry. On the AI front, we work with the many companies. If you start naming them, people say, oh, but we are also partnering. So you can think of all the institutions, right? I mean, let me give you a concrete example. We recently launched the National AI Research Resource called the NAIR pilot. Okay. And this was part of the executive order of President Biden in October. And he had tasked each of the agencies to do a variety of things. And for NSF, one of those things was to launch this NAIR pilot to democratize AI access to AI resources. Because remember that AI requires large computational resources, data sets access, models, and so on, right? So if that is the case, are we then letting only the big companies which have access to those resources or the big universities which have access to those resources or could get access to those resources only be partaking in the AI in our futures? Clearly not. So how do we go about changing that? So this NAIR pilot is about how do we bring a democratized AI resource access, right? And within 90 days, we were supposed to launch the AI pilot. And I'm proud to say, Sanjay, that we launched with a $30 million investment that NSF made, but we had 12 interagency partners all contributing, as well as 25 plus industry partners, philanthropy, nonprofits participating in this. I again invite people to check this out, right? And the who's who in AI, whether it is a philanthropy, whether it is a nonprofit, whether it is companies that you would think about, right? All of them are all partners in this. For example, NVIDIA invested $30 million equivalent of resources to the table. They brought to the table. Microsoft likewise brought $20 million. Like what Amazon brought, I mean, OpenAI. All of them are participating in this, right? And as I said, if I start naming them, there is a list of those partners already available on our website. I encourage people to check it out. But to put it in summary form, the who's who are all involved, right? That's important because you need to bring together the collective investments of all of them in order for us to be able to provide the resources necessary for people to be able to translate their ideas. Okay. So when you talk about upskilling, reskilling, back to the main question, right? When you work with industry, clearly you understand what their interests are. They want their existing talented folks to be trained and retrained, clearly. They also are willing to take folks that are in different other industries who are willing to retrain, upskill themselves, reskill themselves, and make themselves available for the need, the rapid need that is, and the growing need for AI expertise, right, in the workforce. So what we're doing is we're working with, of course, always academia, and that includes universities, community colleges, and others, so that the curriculum development is something that we can invest in. Okay, we can invest in some pilot programs. In partnership with industry, we can make sure the content is, you know, current and what is needed for the future, right? So we make sure that we are doing all of these things. And that's what NSF ought to do and is doing and will do even more as we go into the future, right? But it takes the entire ecosystem to work together to really deliver the benefits at the end of the day. We work with partners like the Department of Education, Department of Labor, and this is what you would think, the Department of Commerce, right? You would think that these are all very important partners for us in order for us to be able to deliver the outcomes of upskilling, reskilling, and keeping the workforce ready for today and for the future.
So, Dr. Panch, for our listeners, NAIR gives them compute resources to people. People can now have the ability that only large companies had. And then you also invested in course curriculum for community colleges and others so that people can have some reskilling and other kinds of things. So that's a big push in terms of reskilling and upskilling. Dr. Panch, shifting a little bit in terms of AI development raises some ethical concerns about bias, privacy, and safety. How can NSF support research that addresses some of these concerns and make sure that AI benefits all of society?
Yeah, no, this is a very important question. And clearly something that is on top of mind for many people. Because with any rapid development of a technology, it doesn't matter what technology is, and AI is even more because the partnership with human is so intimate, as you can imagine. And therefore, it's very important that we are safeguarding ourselves from all of those things that can, you know, take us off track, right? So NSF has always been investing in these kinds of ideas. And this is not just in the last few years, several years, because we always think proactively, right, in terms of this. And as I said, one of the most important ingredient on that one is the fact that it has to be not solutions created only by technologists and the people that are excited about technology, because usually that what happens with that is that we go far too far with the technological development that sometimes we don't pay enough attention to all of these important things of, you know, ensuring that bias, ethics, responsible development, policy, and others also working together. And in fact, I would argue that they have to be at the front end, not at the back end, right? Even as you create the technologies, you have to have all of these inspirations shaping and sort of working with building the technologies of the future. And so NSF has been investing on these kinds of ideas. I remember several, this maybe even two decades ago, in nanotechnology. There are centers of NSF nanotechnology and society, right? What will the implication in societal terms be, right? And so, Sanjay, my own personal research, having worked with individuals with a range of abilities, disabilities, I mean, I've been keenly aware of the importance of engagement of various constituencies to make sure that we get the ideas, the inputs, the challenges, and then factor them in as you're thinking about the research and where you invest in and how do you move forward in developing solutions, right? That's what is needed. And that's what NSF is focused on. We work with a range of companies, again, who are interested in this because companies want solutions to these problems too, right? And so, and NSF is a place where they can work with and partner with and invest in co-creating such solutions. So we're very happy to be able to be that player that is enabling that kind of research and data sets and models development, right? And to the point that you made earlier about NAIR being an infrastructure that is available for people who have interest in solving these problems in academia. And so to make this resource available to them so that they can exercise their talent and ideas to find real solutions. So that's what NSF is really good at. And we'll continue to push that even more as we are going to launch from the NAIR pilot into a full-scale NAIR too.
That's great. So working with many different stakeholders. Dr. Panch, the issue of international collaboration in AI research is a complex one with many opportunities and challenges. What is your perspective on how NSF can maybe foster productive international collaborations, obviously while safeguarding our national interest?
Looking to make the most out of AI advancements and innovation? Visit regulatingai.org to learn more about how best to optimize the use and integration of AI and sign up for the Regulating AI newsletter to keep up to date with the latest in AI governance and regulation.
Excellent question. I always say our international partnerships are grounded fundamentally in the values. Values that we share, scientific values, otherwise, as well as other values, human values. You know, in this case, openness, for example, transparency, reciprocity, research integrity, respect for intellectual property, some fundamental core values that we all align on. Okay? Any partner who share our values and aspirations, we call them like-minded partners. So this is the moment that we need to hyper-partner with nations that are like-minded. Okay, because remember, Sanjay, you talked about opportunities and challenges. Remember, opportunities are global, right? Opportunities are global. And so any problem that you look at globally, when you solve them, they have tremendous impact locally. And that unleashes talent, ideas, innovation, more importantly, economic, societal progress, as well as national security, progress in national security terms. Therefore, it's important for us to engage with our like-minded partners. And so I am very committed to working with our like-minded partners. And I can talk about many such partnerships that we've been working on. We have new conceptualizations that we have launched recently called Global Centers. And we're working on themes and problems. The first Global Centers that we launched with a close to $80 million investment with four nations. We invested $30-plus million, and the other nations invested with us. And this is part of the AUKUS, the USA, Canada, UK, and Australia. And then we worked in the area of climate and clean energy. And guess what? Many of those projects, we launched seven of them. And many of those projects are going to have an AI underpinning because, as I said earlier, AI is going to be part of everything. But what is exciting to me is in the Quad partnership with Japan, Australia, India, and the US, we have proposed the launching of AI for agriculture, which can not only benefit all our nations, but also benefit the Indo-Pacific and the United States, okay, and this region, the North American region, a lot more. So we are trying to find AI-related partnerships, bilateral, multilateral, working through these constructs that they're putting together so that we might be a model. One of the things that US has always been, great convener, people look up to the work that we do here, right, and want to partner. And most importantly, we develop models of good value-based advancement of discoveries, technologies, innovations that impact the global good, but then has direct implications to our national security, economic security, and societal progress here, right here in the US, for everyone.
So partnering with like-minded, value-based partners, you have done something with AUKUS and AI for agriculture, looking at climate, AI for climate and Quad. So those are very interesting opportunities, Dr. Punch, that is happening. Dr. Punch, public trust in AI is essential for its development. How can NSF engage the public in conversations about AI and build trust in its responsible use?
And I always say trust is earned, right? And so one of the things that we are doing is, of course, through the investments that we are making through all the initiatives of AI, we are ensuring that those investments that we're making, let's take the AI institutes, they in turn, in every one of those AI institutes, they have an ethics plan as an example, okay? So which means that people are using those platforms also to engage with the appropriate constituencies, okay, to build the trust. We've also got other programs, Sanjay, I just want to alert you to that. One of those programs is called the Civic Innovation Challenge, right? Civic Innovation Challenge is where we take community-based problems being solved, and the investment that NSF makes is in communities that work in partnership with academia. Typically, NSF is thought of as, oh, they invest in academia, which brings partners from the community and other sectors. But we have also started to look at new programs, like investing in communities through the Civic Innovation Challenge that partners with academia and other sectors, right? So that it is much more driven by the problems that they're trying to solve. And when you invest in community-based solution seeking, clearly that brings public into the fray, right? And this, as Sanjay, is not just only NSF's issue. All of us, it's all of government and all of the nation, I would argue, okay, coming together. And I'm excited by what is happening today with the interest in AI, not only through the NAIR process that was the interagency process. I'm excited by the fact that both the Senate and the House have AI caucuses. And Senator Schumer, Senator Heinrich and Rounds, who lead the AI caucus in the Senate, have, for as an example again, in the House, likewise, they have House caucus. See, basically what they're doing is they're holding listening hearings, they're holding panels, they're listening and configuring the policies. And the fantastic executive order that the president issued again is about addressing all of the societal, public-facing issues in a very open, transparent, and a productive manner. I think all of this, in the nation, I look at this moment as it is truly bipartisan effort to be able to move this amazing potential technology, AI, to benefit humanity and do it the right way.
So working with communities as well as working with legislators is very important. Dr. Punch, AI has the potential to revolutionize various sectors from healthcare to transportation. What are some of the most promising applications of AI that you see? Because you get a real bird's eye view on this on the horizon.
It pretty much, as I said, it touches almost everything, every application that you can think about. For example, if you look at the range of AI institutes, Sanjay, that speaks for itself in terms of, let me give you a few examples again, right? We have AI institutes focused on weather, climate, focused on finding real solutions, right? We have AI institutes focused on advanced learning, tutoring. In fact, one of the AI institutes that we funded in the latest cycle, I'm very excited by that. It's about how do we ensure that speech language pathologists working with AI can expand the speech language services. It turns out there are close to 3 to 4 million children who need speech language services. Yet there are only 62,000 plus speech language pathologists. But you're not going to be able to scale. You're not going to be able to work in determining who needs help and what kind of help. These are areas that AI can be a tremendous assistance. So this particular project led by the University of Buffalo is focused on, with a team of folks, is focused on building AI for assisting speech language pathologists to be able to expand their services so that we can meet the demand, right? Now, you can see that the reason I'm saying all of this is whether it's agriculture, health, weather, learning, assisting. I mean, I can go on and on. There's not one area that is untouched. For example, we have partnerships in our AI to the Department of Transportation, Department of Homeland Security. Clearly then, you can imagine that there is nowhere where it is not part of what we are. And you see that in your daily life. You get in a car today, right? You're becoming more and more automated. AI, right? So everything that you think about has got tremendous implications and opportunities. And therefore, we are working, NSF is working with our partners to be able to make sure that the fundamental core AI innovations are addressing the challenges that needs to be addressed. As I said earlier, that those emerging challenges and existing challenges are enriching and focusing the AI work in a way that we can deliver solutions both at the same time.
So amazing example of speech pathology. As you said, AI is like electricity and it's everywhere and we can solve so many problems. But really kudos on that application. And then you said weather, transportation. Dr. Punch, AI has some incredible opportunities and potential. Do you believe we need some guardrails? I mean, you saw the executive order by President Biden and now Senator Schumer has got these listening sessions. There are over 100 bills in Congress. And we are in an election year, but there's talk of different kinds of legislation. The EU AI Act is much further along. What are your thoughts on, should we have some guardrails around AI?
Oh, guardrails are always, this is not new to just AI only. Guardrails are always a good thing because we want to make sure, because I think fundamentally I believe in the human spirit of wanting to do the right thing always, okay? And guardrails help us to keep the focus. And guardrails helps us to channel our energies in a way that satisfies our fundamental core spirit of doing the right thing for ensuring that it benefits humanity and society. And therefore, given that, I think guardrails are important. It always helps people to know, how to navigate themselves as they are exploring, discovering, building innovations and solutions. So I think that's a very good approach. And as I said earlier, I am excited by the interest in Congress as well as in the administration, as well as in the general scientific community and beyond the general community of our citizens in making sure that this technology, which has got so much potential, is built and developed in a way that actually delivers that potential and more. And so I'm very excited by this moment. I'm an optimist, as people have said again and again. Yes, I am an optimist, but I'm a realist. And having worked in this area myself, I know that the opportunities that addresses the challenges makes possible amazing innovations and possibilities that the future is limitless. And as we say, the frontier is endless. So,
yeah, the frontier is endless for sure. Dr. Punch, beyond your role at NSF, you had a very distinguished career in computer science and engineering. What are some of the lessons you've learned through that journey that you believe could be relevant in the field of AI?
Sanjay, as I mentioned just to the previous response, my own research, my PhD research started with machine learning. It was not called machine learning in those days, but it was the machine learning approaches that we used in my own work in image and video processing, compression of images, and spectral quantization was my own research, which was essentially about learning. And then subsequently, my work in computer vision was also building on that. And so I've been at it for now 30, 35 years, right? So I'm excited to see through the evolution of all of this, where we are right now, and I'm thrilled beyond belief. Okay, that's the first response. What makes it even more exciting for me is I have seen it in the front row seat as being an envisioner, participant, and a creator of solutions for people with a range of abilities. Yet now I'm talking about my work that I started about 25 years ago, right? Working with individuals with a range of abilities. And I have seen that when you bring in technology with people and the co-evolution of technology and people and the co-creation of amazing discoveries as well as amazing innovations, and more importantly, the people that got trained, the people with a range of abilities now doing amazing things and having seen them firsthand, I can tell you this is very exciting, right? I had a student, David Hayden, who was an individual who was visually impaired, and that he came to me one day when I had started my research center, and he participated in creating the solution of the note taker and won the Microsoft Imagine Cup Challenge. He came in as an undergraduate student, a double major in math and computer science, after the freshman year, struggling to do his courses. And then within 2 years, in the junior year, he had won the Microsoft Imagine Cup World Competition because of what he created. So I know firsthand what I've seen this through many such people and experiences myself, the power, the potential of human spirit when given the opportunity to engage with emerging technologies like AI and making them participants, co-creators and creators, amazing futures are made possible, right? And now, as I said in my early remarks in this conversation, we need to make this possible for everyone all across our nation. That's the pursuit that I am very engaged in. I'm very intensely focused on, very excited by, because I know that the potential, when given the opportunity to express itself, will make amazing and unbelievable things possible. And this is a moment in our nation to do that. And I'm privileged to have the opportunity to lead NSF and do my part working with my team, which is an amazing team of people. The NSF staff are amazing. These are people that come in every day and want to do great things for humanity, society, the scientific community, and progress. And working with such inspired people who inspire me every day, I'm proud to be a part of this journey with NSF into the future, which is going to make possible even greater things than what has happened in close to the first 75 years since the formation of NSF. We are about to celebrate our 75th anniversary next year. And I can tell you, there are many successes to speak for. 262 Nobel laureates supported early in their careers in physics, chemistry, biology, medicine, and economics. No agency on planet Earth has that kind of a profile, right? And then being the agency that incubated the SBIR program in the 80s, invested in companies like Google, Qualcomm, early in their stage of evolution, in the case of Google, investing in the people that, the co-founders that had a great project, which then blossomed into the company itself, and in Qualcomm and Ginkgo Biotech and so on, investing early through the SBIR program, thousands and thousands of companies being launched, right? And the most important thing of all, the people that have NSF as part of the DNA, who are leading industries today, who are participating in the success of industries today, who are the entrepreneurs of today, yesterday, and will be tomorrow, and the academic, fantastic academic minds, people in nonprofits, philanthropy, even in public service, right? I find that NSF has touched so many people and will touch even more people, and that's what I hope, so that we can make possible the amazing futures for our nation.
Wow. 262 Nobel Prize, gotten support, companies like Google, Qualcomm, who got support through the SBIR programs, incredible. And as you said, you have an amazing team because it takes more than a person, as you said, Dr. Punch, to get some of these things done. And you had, as you said, a front row seat, and your mission is to make it available to everybody, Dr. Punch. Dr. Punch, given that you had and have a front row seat, what advice would you give to either young researchers and entrepreneurs who are passionate about making a positive impact with AI?
Now, just one correction I want to make. The SBIR program invested in Qualcomm. Google was a project on digital libraries that we invested in. So to be very factual about everything, I always believe in facts and to make sure that people don't misunderstand. To your question about what is the advice to young folks?
Young entrepreneurs, researchers who are passionate about AI.
I would say dive in deep. This is an area that's going to make possible great things. Whatever the focus of your entrepreneurial venture is, AI is going to enhance, enrich, empower, and make possible even greater things. So ensure that you are embracing AI, you're diving deep, learning, and developing, but most importantly, team with people who know a lot more, because not all the time can you be immersed to the level of the depth, because if you're solving a problem that requires domain expertise and AI becomes an addition to that, then sometimes you will be able to get to a particular point, but let not that be a limiting factor. Work with a team of people who have a full understanding of that and then bring them on, and so they can then work with you and co-create even bigger and greater things. So engage, participate, get inspired, get excited. This is the future. This is going to become part of your everyday life. And so you may as well. We never ask the questions, can you plug something into a socket? You talk about safeguards, when not to touch what in electricity terms. We will figure this out. But it's important for you to be part of that and make it part of your life. And don't shy away from it. Don't stay away from it. Don't be afraid of it. Don't be fearful of it. Just know that you can do it and you will make a huge impact by embracing it.
So engage, participate, collaborate. Don't be afraid, and we'll figure it out. Some great advice. Dr. Punch, final comments. As I've said, we have a global audience, members of Congress, think tanks, etc. Final comments for our audience?
As I said, I think it takes everyone. Sanjay, you, me, and you do a phenomenal job in conducting these kinds of conversations, which is hugely beneficial, right? It takes every one of us who have the ability to be able to take this exciting future. But the important thing to keep in mind is there are a lot of people who are left behind, a lot of places that are left behind. We cannot have this happen in the future. So all of us who have the potential, the ability, let's participate in ensuring that we make this future of opportunities for everyone everywhere, and that innovation is for everyone everywhere and anywhere is fully realized. And so this is a call to action almost. Let all of us endeavor to make sure that prosperity is for all. And that's something that I'm deeply passionate about. And I welcome all the listeners. I know many of them are already on that trajectory. So, but for those of you who are still having tremendous talents and ideas, please join in this trajectory of making possible things for everyone everywhere.
Innovation for everyone, opportunities for everyone. Dr. Punch, your insights and leaderships are really invaluable to the ongoing conversation about AI and regulating AI. Thank you for sharing your perspectives with our listeners today. And to our listeners, we encourage you to continue this crucial dialogue about AI regulation. Share your thoughts, engage in respectful debate, and help us, as Dr. Punch said, build a future where AI serves the greater good and good for all. And we will be back soon with another episode. Dr. Punch, thank you so much, knowing how busy you are, for being so patient and for what NSF is doing, your team is doing, and for what you're doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Sanjay. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Regulating AI Innovate Responsibly podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on the show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you'll never miss an episode, and leave us a 5-star review.